-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameschet.
Hi and hello and happy Halloween, sports fans. Welcome to -3. In just a moment, we have Andy Staples joining us. If you're a college football fan, you'll want to stick around for that to try and figure out what's going on in college football. It's expanded a little bit based on the usual heavyweights and some newcomers, TCU, Oregon's coming on. Can these teams sneak into the Final Four? Is it going to be the usual customers when all hash is settled here? A huge game upcoming, obviously, down there in Athens, Georgia, in SEC country. Tennessee, +9 down there. I'm surprised by that number, Eddie Spaghetti. You're sitting up there in Seattle. Happy Halloween to you. You went up there to watch your gents take on the Seahawks. How you finding the city of Seattle so far?
I love Seattle. I've been here once before for a few days, and I got lucky with the weather then, got lucky with the weather again this time, because they always say, you know, October, November, December, obviously the weather starts to turn. You really got to come up here July and August, but we had sun on Friday and Saturday, and honestly, the weather was not that bad at all Sunday. I don't think it really played a factor in the game too much. It was maybe light drizzle here and there, but totally fine. But I love it here. So much to do. Great city, great town of sports fans, everyone wearing Seahawks, but really mainly Kraken stuff too. And I wonder also, if I was here before the Mariners were eliminated, how much Mariners stuff. There are a lot of Mariners hats, but man, the Kraken, like everyone is taking over. I think it's a combination of just like finally getting a new team there. It is really insane to think about how Seattle really only had the Hawks and the Mariners, like two of the four major sportsmen. This is a major, major city, and the major city that loves sports. So everyone's wearing those uniforms, great color scheme, great arena. Really love Seattle. I'm jealous to be able to get to live here.
Yeah, well, and also the home of your beloved Pearl Jam and all the rest of it. So I'm not surprised you would enjoy it up there. Yeah, that's been my experience. I've been there 3 times, and each of the 3 times, the locals explained to me, you are very lucky with the weather this time. It's not usually like that, but I have a weird sense of how great it is there, because I've seen crystal blue skies and nothing but when I've made my journeys up there. And you mentioned the sports town. You know, it's funny, ironically or otherwise, what is it now? It's almost 15 years, I guess, or something like that, since the Seattle Supersonics ditched Washington and moved. They didn't just leave town with Kevin Durant, the Rookie of the Year, in tow. They went to Oklahoma City. That's embarrassing if you're Seattle. And so began the Sonic Award, the worst, the city, the sports town whose fans have suffered the most. This isn't who has the worst winning percentage collectively among its teams, but who suffered the most. If you had high expectations for your team and they fell on your face, or if they broke your heart in the playoffs or otherwise, that's a factor in the Sonic Award. I got to tell you, I might just pull the plug on it the rest of the year, because I don't know how Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania doesn't get it this year. The Penguins with the heartbreaker against the loathsome Rags. You remember that when that series happened last spring, Spaghetti?
I think I do. That was a great time. Yeah.
That was disgusting. And now the Penguins haven't started this season great. Pitt football, after the glorious Kenny Pickett experience of 2021, back where they belong, .500. The Pirates is the Pirates, and then there are the Pittsburgh Steelers, 2-6. Not great times there. They might take home the Sonic Award, and they've won it before. Pittsburgh might get it again. In the meantime, before we get into college football here, a couple of notes I wanted to give you the better. The Al Michaels special upcoming on Thursday night. Al Michaels, I get it. It's cute that he doesn't love the bad games, and he is sort of the personification of NFL fans this year, because a lot of games haven't been very good. But he's also making millions of dollars for this. He could have a little bit of a sunnier disposition. Sorry to get up on Mount Pius about it, but come on. But anyway, Al Michaels special, getting another punishment here. The Philly Eagles, who hammered the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, now catch the Houston Texans. The Eagles are laying 13. The Bills are laying 13. And the KC Chiefs, this is the one that surprises me the most, giving 11 points to the Tennessee Titans. Those are all wacky. And as we always say on Extra Points when we get together with Cousin Sal, you know one thing's for sure. Double-digit favorites ain't all coming through in the same weekend there. Which one, Spaghetti, are you taking? You have to take one of those teams to cover those giant numbers in pro football. Eagles 13, Bills laying 13, Chiefs laying 11.
it's tough. I want to predict something, and I'm actually gonna lay with the Eagles. And I think the reason why is because the Texans actually may ship off Brandon Cooks, it seems like, before the trade deadline.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing that's annoying with the Texans in regards to this bet is that they're the team that, like, they could actually win when they're not supposed to win one. Davis Mills is not a miserable quarterback. The just team was kind of bereft of talent. I mean, besides really Damian Pierce in the backfield. But I think that, like, because of this curse of Thursday Night Football, and I think if they do move away Brandon Cooks, who, by the way, is like one of the most underrated receivers we've had in the NFL the last few years, the only guy in NFL history to have 1,000 yards with three different teams, three seasons in a row. So whatever team gets him, hopefully my Giants will be in luck. But I don't think he's just wasting his time now as a 29-year-old in Houston. They're going to move him, and the Eagles are
it is very crazy team. Cooks. The Cooks career is the craziest because he presents as a nice fella. You never really hear, like, boy, he doesn't really hit the playbook hard. Mm-hmm. Or like, he's a jerk behind the scenes. Why has that guy, of all human beings, moved around as much as he has? It's unusual, but
Yeah, but so I think the Eagles are a complete team. As much as it pains me to say this, I mean, in every facet of the game, they're good in. And Jalen Hurts, a guy that, you know, didn't have a ton of buzz coming out of school, because of how he moved to Oklahoma and then national title game stuff with Tua. He is a good quarterback. Like, I'll admit it. Like, I was skeptical at first, and him and Sirianni together work magic. AJ Brown, 3 touchdown catches last week. Like, what a move to get him. They're scary good.
Well, as far as that goes, I've been perusing on Caesars all the future plays out there. The Bills are the favorite to win the Super Bowl at plus 240, and they're the Eagles at plus 500, Chiefs at plus 700. And then after that, you know, the Cowboys, surprisingly, 16-1 behind the Vikes at 15-1, and they're your Niners. And I get the narrative is that the NFC is softer than the AFC is. But between the Eagles and the NFC East together, and the Niners there at 12-1 feel like an interesting play. You may not love Jimmy G. You may think you see the ceiling where it is, but it's hard to argue with the results with him under center and CMC going into LA. Once again, a tale maybe not as old as time, but since the time that the Rams hired McVay and the Niners hired Shanahan, the results are in. Shanahan owns McVay. It's almost weird that they lost that NFC title game within the past year there. I'm looking through also the division favorites here, and believe it or not, the Vikes are close to the Bills in terms of how prohibitive of a favorite they are to win their division. The Packers are now plus 800 to win the NFC North is crazy, and the Vikes are minus 1100 to hold on there. I think that's wacky. The Seahawks plus 300. That's an interesting one to play, I think. The Niners are minus 135 to win the division. They're looking up at the Seahawks right now. That's a surprise. You may want to lay a little something on Geno if you're a believer there. Like I say, Bills as prohibitive as it gets, but the Dolphins, it does matter. I don't think the Dolphins are going to win it, but they're a different team with Tua versus their backup QBs. If you're a risk taker, if you want a fun bet, the Dolphins did beat the Bills once head to head. It's not a small matter, but if they could beat the Bills up in Buffalo, it becomes interesting. And they're 10-1 as it sits currently. Titans, talk about when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Man, they are now minus 275 to win the South. The Colts are looming there at plus 430. I think the bottom line is maybe nobody's good in that division. And the Cowboys plus 475 behind the Eagles. I mean, long way to go here. Let's not get swept up and be prisoners of the moment here. That Cowboys defense ain't jive. And with Dak back in there and cooking a little bit more on Sunday. But here's the one, Spaghetti. I'm sorry. This was all me vamping to get to the NFC South. The Buccaneers are still your favorite to get it. And looking like they are, I mean, I know it's Tom Brady. And I'm with Sal that maybe they don't have to get on a heater here to win the division. There are enough games for them to win. But are you buying the Falcons still at plus 240 and they're the Saints at plus 460 that they should be looking up at the Buccaneers right now? Who's your play right now if you're putting a unit or 10 on one of these NFC South teams to take it home?
I mean, I wouldn't feel great about any of these teams. They're all missing players. They're all dealing with injuries. The Falcons are with Patterson. Obviously, we see what happens with the Panthers with both quarterbacks injured. Trade away McCaffrey. Somehow still, you know, they won a game. They're in a game. I guess they're going to keep DJ Moore, but I don't think they should. You know, and they fire their coach. So that to me, it makes no sense as a division. Then you look at the Saints. Obviously, they miss guys every single week. I don't want to say the Bucs because I think that Tom Brady is finally dealing with age. He's finally not focused on football, but I think there's just enough talent there with the defense. Leonard Fournette's been catching the ball and he's been really, really good. If they didn't actually have him, they'd be a lot worse. And they still have the receivers like when healthy. So I just think if Tom plays,
it doesn't make sense. I agree. Yeah. But you know what though? I will say this. Tom Brady maybe just got old. And as I've said for at least 15 years now, the cliff is severe for NFL QBs. It doesn't make sense. But when a QB gets to the cliff, it is a swift and harsh drop off. It is not a gentle decline into the good night. So if that's the case with Brady at 45, he beat the odds. He really didn't defeat Father Time, but he did hold him off as well as anybody in the history of big time professional sports, legitimately, but maybe it finally has caught up with him. And then I do like the Falcons. Marty Weiss on Extra Points said a couple of weeks ago, and I kind of laughed, the Falcons. I mean, that's a fun bet, but obviously that's not going to come true. I do think you should sprinkle a little something on those Falcons at plus 240 there. And I also like the Cowboys. I know the Eagles. This is the time to make these bets, though, people. This is when the Eagles look unbeatable because they have literally been unbeatable so far this season. Now's the time to jump in on the Cowboys. No offense to your gents. I just don't think they're gonna do it at plus at 11-1. But you know what?
No, I don't think so. But I also say the same thing, that jump on the Cowboys because the Eagles look dominant. Jump on the Bucs because the Bucs have looked pretty bad. Because Tom Brady, even being old and being 50-65%, whatever he was, is better than Marcus Mariota, PJ Walker, Andy Dalton, or Jameis, or whoever they tried at a quarterback there. The NFC South QB group is brutal, and those teams don't have a guy like playoff Lenny Fournette. They don't have the receivers they do, and the defense is still stopping the run. Like, they're still a good defense that has been battle-tested in the playoffs, which is why it's hard to shake the Bucs.
They got to get healthy. That's the thing on the back end for the Bucs. But also, I think Rashad White is going to take more and more of the touches away from Lenny Fournette as it goes along here. The one bet I remain bullish on, it's not available right now because we're in the midst of games of the week, still not concluded yet. But be on the lookout. I know I keep saying it. This is the time. Talk about buy low. By the Pittsburgh Steelers season win total. I may drop after the hammering in Philadelphia. They are going to get over 5.5. A lot of the cynical yinzers don't like it. Dude, you're crazy. They might win 3 games this year. Yeah, they might, but they're not going to. They're going to win in the range of 7-9 games still. They are going to come on in the second half of this season. Even if you don't like it and you think they should tank out and get a top 5 pick, it's just not going to go that way. They're too talented. Once they get TJ Watt back, they should be 3-5, and they would be if they had their best player available to them. Big difference, it feels like, in the way this pro football season is shaping up, between 2-6 and 3-5. You're not out of it at 3-5. 2-6, you ain't making the playoffs. Anywho, let's talk college football now with one of the great voices in the game of college football. And also, we'll talk some food with our guy, Andy Staples, right now, well, after this quick break.
Hey, listen up, sports fan. This message is for you. Your first bet with Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, it's on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code CZRFULL and place your first bet. If you win, mazel tov. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet. That first bet also gives you 1,000 tier credits and 1,000 reward credits, putting you closer to the types of perks, game tickets, experiences, and more. And because Caesar plays by the rules, here comes the lengthy, responsible gaming disclaimer. 21 and over, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or our nation's capital. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Ohio, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or Maryland. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Here we go, just in the nick of time to make sense of the chaos that we're seeing in 2022 college football. You know him from The Athletic, The Andy Staples Show, along with Ari Wasserman. Always good stuff. In fact, I just consumed it on YouTube in preparation for this show so I could keep up with his insights on the great game of college football. Also on Sirius XM, it's our guy Andy Staples. What's the poop, fella?
What's up, Shaq?
How are we? What a pleasure to see you once again. You're enjoying college football this year. A little less certainty than what we've seen in the last half decade or so. There is at least a conversation to be had about who's going into this Final Four, right? Not just one outlier, but there are multiple teams that can make a case for being a part of the four-team tournament come Christmas time, right?
There are 13 right now that, based on committee precedent, you could say they're still eligible. Now, I would argue that LSU also is still eligible because in some way they, you know, if somehow they win the rest of their games from Alabama this weekend on, then I think they would be the first two-loss team to make the playoff. It's similar to 2017 when Auburn won the SEC West with two losses, and had they beaten Georgia in the SEC title game, they probably would have gotten in. So 13 or 14 still in the mix, which I feel like is a lot more than we're used to in the first week of November. So I will take it. I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, as Eddie Spaghetti and others keep pointing out, of all the years to hear, we're finally going to get an expanded tournament. It's too bad it can't arrive right now, because this is the first time it would be compelling. So before we dig in there, the thing that strikes me as I open my eyes to start a new football week is that Georgia is laying 9 for Tennessee. First of all, I was stunned by, you know, I always point to as a good recent example, Syracuse. I hammered the Irish going into this one because Syracuse has just come off. And these are 20-year-old human beings.
Yep.
And, you know, they have to get up 2 weeks in a row for monster games for, you know, the profile of the program and everything else. And it looked like they had Clemson whipped down there at Clemson. Of course they were going to have a letdown game here. Ergo, Notre Dame gets them. By the same logic, I am stunned that they didn't beat UK, that they destroyed them in front of a massive game against Georgia upcoming. How say you on that one? What does it tell us about Tennessee?
I was surprised that it was as dominant as it was, especially the defensive performance. They forced some turnovers that really just crippled Kentucky's offense, and it got Will Levis pressing, and it's kind of snowballed on him, got worse and worse. And, you know, I kept wondering with that Alabama game, usually Tennessee's schedule goes Alabama, open date, and then somebody else. Usually it's South Carolina. The SEC has changed it around now so they get Kentucky. And I was thinking, okay, if they'd had the open date, that might have been a problem because then you're just celebrating the Alabama game. But they had to come back and play UT Martin, which they weren't going to lose, but it did sort of give them a chance to refocus. And the other thing, I was in Knoxville all last week and talking to players and coaches, and the one thing that struck me is, at least for the players, they went through so much crap at the end of the Jeremy Pruitt era that I don't think they're particularly worried about how the good things are going to affect them negatively. Like, they have a pretty good sense of perspective. Like, hey, things were pretty crappy around here. So now all of this is gravy. So how about we just keep working hard and try to keep winning?
Well, first of all, in the UK game, I am an opponent of every football team solving whatever issue their uniforms have by just going head to toe black. But let me just tell you something. Those Vols head to toe blacks were something else.
I liked
Sweet,
it.
Right?
I usually don't like it when somebody who has a pretty iconic uniform does something different, but that looked sharp. Like it looked like they'd always had that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It was that, you know what it was? It was the absence of any white. It was that right. It was so severe, black and orange, and that's it. It looked
and that orange is that orange is so bright. You know, it's the color right. of the daisies that grew on the hill where the original campus building stood. That's why it's a different orange. I don't have the Pantone chart in front of me, but it's a different orange than all these other Syracuse, Florida, Auburn, all of those. And so, yeah, it really pops off the black.
Yeah. That, and it's also not burnt. Like that,
not burnt like
it down there in Texas. but how say you, are you surprised by that number that Georgia is laying 9 points to Hendon Hooker, the I wouldn't say prohibitive favorite. And in fact, you know, I think Stetson could consider, as recently as 4 days ago, I was saying like, people are not talking about Stetson Bennett getting the Heisman Trophy nearly enough. And the long odds for him are pretty juicy there. I don't think he's going to get it, but I think you might even be able to make a case that the winner of this game might get those accolades. But you, on your podcast, made a fascinating point that the loser of this game is in real good shape anyway, because it allows them to probably avoid the SEC title game. Yes?
Yes, but also the winner of this game doesn't necessarily have to win the SEC title game. The winner of this game, if they can go 12-0 in the regular season, is going to be in the position that Georgia was going to the SEC title game last year, where if you win, great, you're the number one seed. If you lose, you're probably the number three seed. I mean, that's because you're probably playing Alabama. Now, if it's LSU, maybe that's a different story. But you're probably playing a one-loss Alabama. One-loss Alabama, if they win the SEC, is making the playoff. And if it's close, and especially if it's Tennessee and you've already beaten Alabama, then you have a situation like Georgia and like Clemson and Notre Dame in 2020, where they both get in. But I think the winner of this game is in the ultimate power position in terms of the playoff, because they just need to finish the regular season undefeated and don't get blown out in the SEC title game. That's it. And then everybody else is going to be fighting for that, the other three spots. But the loser of this game, yes, it, as long as the winner wins the SEC, they'll have a very good resume and a very good chance to make it.
Yeah, I mean, I know, obviously, again, back to the point about these being 20-year-olds primarily, and there's a stumble perhaps out there. I just don't – I can't conjure. I don't have as
imagining. You're not seeing the path of Missouri beating Tennessee?
I don't think the Commodores are going to show up and take them down in that big one. But, yeah, I think – people who are non-SEC, I know it means more, but non-SEC people like me, there's just clear this up. We're not going to see three SEC teams taking up four of those slots. There's no chance of that, right? There's no path that would allow for that.
A few weeks ago, I was on another podcast, and I did put out a four-team SEC playoff scenario. I think that has sort of fallen by the wayside. I don't think there's a three-team SEC scenario either. The one scenario I think was very interesting, and I do feel like is a possibility, somebody's going to knock off TCU, because if TCU keeps winning,
Right.
I mean, by all means. And I actually think a 12-1 TCU that wins the Big 12 should be in there too. But there's a path to two SEC and two Big 10, which right. would, you know, given everything we've seen off the field in the sport, that would be sort of telling. Like, we're calling them the Power Two now anyway. That would just be, and I do wonder, like, I know they're working hard to try to logistically start that 12-team playoff in 2024. If it was two SEC and two Big Ten, I imagine the other leagues would be like, can we just start in 2023? Like, let's figure it out. Let's do it. Enough of this crap.
Well, but I think you and me park our cars in the same garage on this. We wring our hands about, like, I don't want, my team can't get screwed at the end of all this. The weekly updated chapter book that is college football, these things tend to resolve themselves by yes. the end of it. Once we get through title game Saturday, I think it'll be a pretty clear picture, because it, and I'm basing that off of having watched college football yeah, and various forms of,
yeah,
it always ends up at worst. There's one team on the outside that's kind of like, we deserve the shot at worst. I think, who is that team to you on Christmas? Let's jump into the time machine. Jump about, you know, 7-8 weeks into the future here. It's Christmas. Hey, you look a little down in the dumps. You're not drinking your eggnog with typical cheer. Why is that? What team is a little down in the dumps as they try to force down that eggnog?
12-1 Pac-12 champ Oregon, because Tennessee beat Georgia on a last second field goal this week, then went on to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. And it came down to Georgia at number 4 and Oregon at number 5. And that Georgia-Oregon head-to-head result, you could not argue against that. It did not matter what else happened. You could not argue against that utter domination.
Sorry, Ducks. Better luck next Christmas time, I guess. So resolve that one for us. I know that you have some thoughts on what's upcoming here. And boy, this is... I know Bama, the big bully, goes without saying, everything else, the signature win in Knoxville and everything else. But this is now the latest, greatest game of the century here. I mean, this is the reigning national champs. Are we fully absorbing the significance of this because it's an SEC showdown? By the way, Tennessee should be number one. Talk about merit. I know that by Saturday night,
it'll all figure itself out. Yeah, if they win, they'll be number one. So...
But they should be number one anyway. Just going forward, this is what I talk about, what I bellyache about self-validation from the people who create these polls. Obviously, Tennessee's body of work to this point in the season has been superior to Georgia's. It doesn't make any sense. Of course, I'm bellyaching about something that, as I say, by the end of the week, will have figured itself out. But how say you on this one? Are you with me that number's a little bit high for Georgia, given what Hendon Hooker and company have looked like so far this season on offense? I mean, they're pretty close to unstoppable.
Yeah, I would probably give them the 3-point home field advantage and maybe a couple extra. That's mm-hmm. it. Having seen Tennessee in person, especially, first of all, this is not a smoke and mirrors type offense. Like, they're good up front. Their offensive line is very good, and they can do all kinds of different things. You know, it's not just they're running inside zone because you're tired and they're gaining yards on the ground that way. They're running gap scheme, zone scheme, man scheme. They can run power. They can do all that stuff. And then there are elite athletes on the outside. Now, they may have been under-recruited elite athletes. Like, Jalin Hyatt was under-recruited because he was very slight coming out of high school. It's kind of the Devontae Smith story, except probably skinnier than Devontae Smith coming out. He was 155 pounds coming out of high school. And so he's 185 right now and runs, you know, the scouts say he'll run 4.3 at the combine. And so he's really fast. You cannot cover him with a safety. At one point, Kentucky tried to cover him with a linebacker with hilarious results. So they have incredible athletes running this offense. So it's not like in a lot of cases, a team of Georgia's quality with those sorts of athletes on that defense, you can run up against a team that has a great scheme, that's been scoring a bunch of points, and they just get completely locked down because they're not used to playing that level of athlete. Well, they've already played that level of athlete against Alabama. Now, it's basically the same defense. It's at Nick Saban's former defensive coordinator is the head coach at Georgia. So it's very similar. They're going to be now Kirby Smart will have kind of cheated off Nick Saban's paper a little bit and maybe come up with some other ideas. But I do think there's a chance that the Tennessee scores on Georgia the same way they scored on Alabama. Now,
Wow. Here's so you don't think Georgia's defense in 2022 is a tick better at least than Bama's?
I think they're both pretty good. Bama has the better pass rush. Now, against Tennessee, that's not as big of a deal because Hendon Hooker catches the ball and throws it a lot of times. And it doesn't matter how good of a pass rusher you are, you're not getting to him. Mm-hmm. But he's also big and strong and can move. And so it's hard to get him down. So if Georgia can get in his face, get him down, that's something Alabama struggled to do. You know, Will Anderson, who's the best pass rusher in the country, just could not get past Darnell Wright in that game. The Tennessee right tackle. And so the thing that I think is maybe different about this is Georgia's offense and the way they are set up to beat you in a lot of different ways. Alabama's offense, you know, if Alabama has Jamison Williams and John Metchie like they did last year, they're so explosive offensively, they probably would have just outscored Tennessee. They don't have the elite receivers this year who can separate the way Tennessee's receivers can. And now they have Jahmyr Gibbs, who's an incredible tailback, very versatile. But Georgia has a better stockpile of offensive weapons. They've got the backs who are really good, but the tight ends are awesome. Brock Bowers, you were mentioning Stetson Bennett for the Heisman. I think we fall into this trap of just assuming it should be the quarterback.
And yeah, you're so right. It's exactly as it was. The words were coming out of my mouth. I was thinking about. What about the other guys?
I did this a few years ago. I had Kyle Trask, I think, second or third on my ballot. And in hindsight, I look and in that Florida offense, it should have been Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts was the alien. He was the reason that Florida's offense was so dynamic. Well, who's the reason that Georgia's offense is so dynamic? Brock Bowers. There is no tight end who does what Brock Bowers does. I mean, you can force feed him the ball. You could line him up at tailback and hand it to him, and he would be effective. But they are great at getting him open. But then you've got Darnell Washington, who's just a monster, and I actually think might be more productive as a pass catcher in the NFL than he is at Georgia because he won't be surrounded by so much tight end talent. And then they've got a freshman tight end who's really good. And then they've got guys on the outside that can burn, which, again, Alabama did not have that the way they used to have that. And I think that's a problem for them. But Georgia can stretch you vertically, and they can also pound you inside. They have a lot of ways to score. They also have a lot of ways to score in a very methodical fashion. They can control the tempo of a game a lot better than most teams can. And so potentially they could control the tempo and you keep Hendon Hooker off the field. But again, because Tennessee can do so many different things in the run game, I'm not sure that matters as much. Like, you could try to hold the ball for 7 minutes and score and then think, you know, hope that Hendon Hooker being off the field is out of rhythm and all of a sudden they go three and out. But they've are pretty good at figuring out ways to move the ball, whether he's in rhythm or not. So that's the tricky part. But if Georgia can do that, if they can get a long scoring drive, follow that with a three and out or a turnover, and then another scoring drive, that's where you can really change the tempo of the game, suck the momentum away from Tennessee. So I do think Georgia is the better team still. I think if you're asking me to pick who wins, I say Georgia. That's a lot of points, though, that 9-point spread. I'd like to see it less than a touchdown.
It's funny because they, as you say, the dogs are an offensive juggernaut themselves. But I'm with you that Kirby Smart is inclined to try and grind the Vols ever so slightly. They are going to try. I mean, relatively speaking, they are going to try to keep Hooker and company off the field a little bit more. But which is ironic, given what their offense can do to pretty much anyone they go up against. Either way, I can't wait for this one. But Hooker, 24-25, maybe by the time you're have me and Staples in your ears right now. I mean, he's about to turn 25 years of age. Kenny Pickett, first round pick, 24 years of age, one of the young QBs that ain't exactly thriving at the pro level. That's nothing, though, compared to Trevor Lawrence. In my lifetime, Staples, I'm an older man than you. there have been three guys that can't miss a QB. Scouts get a lot of stuff wrong, but they did not get wrong these names. John Elway could not miss. That was the first one I was aware of in my lifetime. Like, this kid at Stanford is surefire. Then there was Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. Then there was Andrew Luck. The scouts collectively, 3 for 3. Is there any chance?
Wasn't Jeff George one of those guys too, though?
No, he was, because he was flighty and you knew it. Because what was the journey for him? I saw him, in fact.
Yeah, he played at Illinois. He was not infallible at Illinois like the other guys were in college.
Yeah, right. Well, before that, though, I saw him play at Purdue. And he and his pals, the Boilers, jumped on the Pitt Panthers. It was 14-0, I think, like literally maybe 4 minutes into the game. And then I think the final score was 42-14 Pitt. But for a second there, you're like, oh, this is the kid everybody's talking about there up in West Lafayette. But is there any chance, by your estimation, that the scouts got it wrong with Trevor Lawrence? Because the results have been mixed at best.
I keep thinking he's going to break out of it.
Me too. I thought he had broken out of it as of week one.
They keep playing these games where one play would turn them. Like in the London game on Sunday, he throws the pick in the end zone. If they punch that in from 1 yard out, they win the game. It's just, I don't know. It feels like it's close enough that it can still turn to the right way for him. But I don't know. The decision-making is questionable. And does it get better? And I don't know the answer to that.
Are you surprised by in the QB league? And you know, I keep pointing to this. Like, you know, it's the opposite of think globally, act locally. It's kind of like, you can tie yourself into knots as a Steelers fan. Kenny Pickett not been great so far. But neither is Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Russell Wilson and so on. A lot of NFL teams are struggling at QB and putting points on the board. But look around the last couple of years. And we were in a run of like, it's a factory. I'm big on QB saturation in the NFL, that there are now more human beings capable of playing decently at the NFL at QB than there are slots for them. But man, these last two classes have me questioning whether or not that's the truth. Are you surprised by Justin Fields and Mac Jones and, like we say, Trevor Lawrence and Kenny Pickett and so on and so forth?
I'm surprised by Lawrence. The other ones were kind of, you just never know. And then last year's class, I said all along, don't take any of these guys if you expect them to start in 2022. That's not who these people are. That there may be some developmental type picks that you can work with. And I do think that matters. I think the way that Andy Reid brought along Patrick Mahomes matters. I think the way that Jalen Hurts was brought along in Philadelphia matters. If you'd thrown Jalen Hurts in right away, I don't think he would be having the success he's having now. I also think it helps to have coaches that are willing to mold what they do around what you are. I think Brian Daboll did a fabulous job of that in Buffalo with Josh Allen, because I was wrong about Josh Allen, because I was like, completion percentages don't just go up when you go to the tougher league. Like, that doesn't happen. Well, it turns out it does if you're superhuman and you have a coordinator who is very smart and willing to say, you know what? I realize this is what my offense looks like, but here's what you do great. So let's focus on that. And I think you're seeing that with quarterbacks, but they were given time. Like, Patrick Mahomes was not thrown to the wolves immediately. Alex Smith played that first season in Kansas City, and Patrick Mahomes got to learn. And there's certain things that you've got to learn coming out of some of these offenses. Like, that Patrick Mahomes played in an air raid offense. He had a lot to learn. He had to learn to take snaps under center. He had to learn to have his back to the defense at times. He had to learn to set protections. That's not something he was asked to do much in college. So you need time with stuff like that. And most of these NFL coaches don't have time because they're about to get fired. So I think that's the tricky part. Like, nobody who was in the quarterback class last year was one that I'd be like, you can just put him in and he'll be great right away. And like, next year, Bryce Young is the guy I feel most confident in terms of intangibles and everything else, but he's an outlier in terms of size. You know,
I kind of agree. I'm not trying to be cynical about that kid, the latest Bama guy, but I see the same thing that the concern I had with Tua all along. Like, nobody, am I the only one who's crazy who notices how small he looks even on the college field?
Tua is not small. Tua is thick. I mean, compared to Bryce Young, like,
I think Tua, even in SEC games, it stood out to me. Like, really? Definitely that guy? Like, he's the prototypical QB for the NFL?
Tua's got big legs, big butt, you know, like, and Kyler's thicker, Baker's thicker, even though they were smaller. Bryce Young is not thick, and he's 5'10". And
he's 5'10"?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he was that little.
Yeah, maybe 5'11". We'll see. I mean, we'll see if he gets on his tippy toes when they measure him at the combine, but he's a smaller guy. Now, CJ Stroud's bigger, but if you ask me which of the two I want to take, I want to take Bryce Young, because when there's pressure on Bryce Young, whether he sees it with his eyes or not, he sees it. He feels it. Mm-hmm. If you watch that Penn State Ohio State game, and this is not the only time this has happened, but there were some plays in that Penn State Ohio State game where you're just yelling at your TV, "Look out, CJ, look out," because somebody's coming right at him and he doesn't even notice him. And it's not like an unflinching, like, "I'm going to stand in this pocket and throw it." It's, "I don't see that person coming at me." And like, that's in the NFL, that's career ending right there. Like, you can't do that.
It is that chicken or the egg. Can you coach that into somebody to take the step forward, the physical step forward in the pocket to evade the pressure? Tom Brady and Drew Brees, neither a great scrambler, always made it look like, why can they negate pressure the way they do? It's because they can change the angle with a slide forward. Whereas you see in the early returns, not to make this about Kenny Pickett, but you see his inclination is to bail to his right. And he drops himself.
And Kenny Pickett, a better athlete than Tom Brady.
Right.
Like, Kenny Pickett running with the football can outrun people, but it is more about your sense of pocket awareness. And, you know, Bryce Young, to me, it's always been amazing to watch him in Alabama, because it feels like he's just floating back there in the pocket. And he'll take off when he has to, but his first instinct is, "I'm going to keep this alive and force those DBs to cover my receivers for a long, long time so I can make a throw." And eventually, and the thing is, he doesn't make a dumb throw after he scrambles around. Like, Caleb Williams at USC, I think, will probably age out of this. But like, when he was at Oklahoma as a freshman, you'd see him, he's amazing at scrambling around. And he'd scramble around and you'd see him like pointing to the receiver. Like when you're playing backyard football with your friends, like, no, now go here. Well, every time he did that, it was going to be an interception or something that should have been an interception. Like, Bryce doesn't have those throws. Like, he will throw it out of bounds or just go take the 2-yard run if he has to. But I like that. The problem is, he still takes some hits. And if you're taking those hits now, you're going to take them in the NFL. I sound like this all the time, but it's true. Like, never draft a quarterback, because you'll just be disappointed. But then you have to draft a quarterback, because you're never going to get a good one any other way.
Yeah, and listen, I think the Josh Allen, that approach is kind of threading the needle for Buffalo, that things worked out as wonderfully as they did there. But I do think you're on to something there with, you get the QB and build around him. The luxury of time that, let's say, I'm going to go one more time with the Pittsburgh Steelers. People are really very upset right now on the banks of the Three Rivers right now, dude, because they're not used to 2-6, dude. But I do think this offseason, when they're finally aren't, when the cap is not their enemy this year, year two is going to be good, because they're really going to have the ability to flesh out that roster, but good for the first time in forever. So I do think that they will get to follow that model. Now, Josh Allen and Kenny Pickett are not pigskin doppelgangers. But before we move off of college football, I do want to say that, these Power Five teams, I should say, go listen to Staples and Wasserman chop up Michigan and Ohio State and their respective chances and what's going to happen in that game. Really insightful stuff there. But regarding Power Five, is Deion Sanders coaching one of those teams at this time next year?
I think if one of those teams is smart, he will be. But I don't know if anybody's smart enough to do that, because I think
there's really, you think somebody, you think there isn't at least a program out there that is taking a look at Prime?
I think Arizona State should be begging him to come.
Yeah, right.
Begging him. Because here's the thing. The worst thing that can happen if you hire Deion Sanders is you get a bunch of attention for a program that doesn't get that much. I'm talking about Arizona State here. I think Auburn's a different animal, because I don't think Deion would want to deal with some of the meddlesome boosters there. And at Auburn, you got to go against Nick Saban and Kirby Smart for recruits. Deion wouldn't be afraid to do that. The question is, would he hire the right staff to be competitive on the field in the SEC? And maybe he would, because the staff he's hired at Jackson State, very good. Like they beat the crap out of people. And it's not just because they have better players. You know, they haven't had enough time to build up that prohibitive of a roster advantage. They're just playing really well. And he's hired people who are very smart. Now, but like, let's say an Arizona State level program, you hire Deion, you're automatically getting more attention. Deion is going to get you NIL money, because Deion is going to be able to convince people in the community, convince national companies who want to do business with him to help fund that. And the other part of it is he's going to go get good players. He's not afraid to take on anybody in the recruiting world. I mean, you saw he gets Travis Hunter, who was the number one recruit in the whole country, and convinces him to come to Jackson State. Well, guess what? When Deion walks in, Deion can walk into anybody's living room. Like, Deion's name opens any door in recruiting. And that's not like Nick Saban's does, because he produces first rounders. Ryan Day, if he calls, you're absolutely talking to him. Dabo Sweeney, because they all produce a bunch of first rounders. Arizona State hasn't produced a bunch of first rounders, but if Deion Sanders calls you from Arizona State, you're talking to him. You're at least listening. You're hearing the pitch.
I agree with you. I wonder if ASU specifically feels burned by the Herm experience. That's two totally different situations. And I get it, but I wonder if that felt like something that was intended to draw attention to the program a little bit, and that didn't exactly work out. I hear
Herm coached it. Herm coached it like a 1990s to early 2000s NFL coach. That was his style of play. It was like, can we get out of here with a 13-6 win? That doesn't work in college football right now. Deion understands what works.
Last thing for you, because I've really enjoyed watching as someone who is an enthusiast about food-related matters. I've enjoyed your participation in such conversations, and you've really become a go-to source for a lot of people about important food-related things. We had a kerfuffle here few months back about breakfast meat, specifically sausage. I'm strongly a link guy. Where do you come down? Because, you know, you're deep south, and I know you like your, you know, there's some really good Bojangles as a, for instance, delicious breakfast, and, you know, you might go sausage patty there. How say you?
Okay, so I think it's situational. I think if you are just eating sausage, you're going to go link. You want it in its purest form. But if you're putting it on a biscuit, you need the flatness of the patty. Because you can't really put the link on a biscuit. I mean, you could.
I mean, you have a knife at your house, right?
You could cut it in half.
You just splay it. You splay the wiener out like this, and then you know it's nice and flat too. It's going to work out just fine.
No, it doesn't. The bites don't come out quite right. You just don't get the evenness. Like I want a perfectly even. I want the right ratio of biscuit to sausage to cheese to egg, and you can only get that from a patty. So that's my reasoning. Put the patty on a biscuit, but I don't want to be fork and knifing a patty and just eating that. That's no fun.
Yeah, well, that's the point. And maybe, just order a hamburger then. That's all it is. It's a patty. The sausage is by definition a link, and you need the snap of the encasing and everything, even if it's already been cracked by a knife before your teeth.
Let me let you in on a little secret that we Southerners have, that we do. Well, we do a lot of things food related better than everybody else, but this one is particularly better. The sausage egg and cheese biscuit, country fried steak egg and cheese biscuit.
Mwah. Okay.
See, you just upgrade your breakfast meat, and you don't even have to argue about it.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to push back on that. Last thing then. Don't mean to put you on the spot before we broom you. I like to celebrate, you know, listen, a bone in ham is is as delicious as you know. But people have known that.
This is at a family function. This is.
Well, no, listen.
Okay.
People have known certain culinary pleasures for 1,000 years at least. I like to celebrate the ones, and people might be surprised by this as an old school fella. I like the Envy Apple, although update, Envy Apple 2022, the dynasty in the fruit world, is not having a good year. And I've said too much already. I don't want to open up a controversy this close to the Shecky Awards. I'm not saying the Envy isn't still the front runner, but there is, much like college football 2022, you cannot just go chalk here and assume victory. This, that's all I'm going to say about it. My question for you is, I celebrate salt on the kosher salt on dark chocolate. I celebrate the smoothie. I don't think smoothies existed before I walked the planet Earth, and yet they're delicious. What is the greatest food invention in the span of your life?
Oh, that is such a good question.
What's new, you know?
That's what I'm trying to think about. Did the waffle fry exist before I lived?
I find it hard to believe it would have. No, I don't.
Yeah,
think
I was
so.
Born in 78. I'm a big waffle fry fan, so I might have to go with that. I'm trying to think if there's any other, you know, because all the various ways to eat pizza, rolled up, Stromboli, all that existed. That's not new.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I don't think existed? Were breakfast scrambles. It was an omelet or it was separated on your plate for you. It's like the bulky man breakfast was like all that. But like getting them all chopped up and mixed together, but not, you know, in like a folded piece of paper. I'm off the omelet in favor of the scramble.
The scramble is a lot better because the egg texture is much better. You're forcing yourself into just having that flat. Because I got to get
it. That's right. It's a scrambled egg. It's ironically, it's called a scramble, but in the omelet, it's a scrambled egg. But when it's a scramble, you can have it over easy if you want.
Exactly. No, I'm with you there. The other thing I was thinking about, and I do think this probably existed, but I don't know that there were restaurants dedicated to it. Now there are quick serve casual restaurants that are dedicated to this idea. The chopped salad. All of the ingredients are placed in the bowl. And then you bring in the cutting tool and you're chopping everything up. And so that each forkful is a perfect mix of everything in the salad.
A little bit of hard boiled egg in there, if you please. A little red onion to go along nicely there. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. You know what else? The expanded reality of milkshakes. You know, Baskin Robbins, you know, they made all sorts of hay when I was growing up because they had 31 flavors. Now we've breezed past 31 flavors of good ice cream places. They have more than that. But specifically, you know, it was hard to find a place that would whip you up a mint chip shake. But now, you know, you go in anywhere, you're not doing your job if you're sticking with chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. So listen, the point is, these are heady days for food enthusiasts and college football enthusiasts and one-stop shopping for both of those groups. Hopefully there's a healthy overlap. I think he's proving there is one based on his success. Thrilled for it. One of the good guys in sports media. Andy Staples, thanks so much for the time, Pally.
Thank you, Sheck. I appreciate it.
Let me squeeze in a quick break here.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right there, Eddie Spaghetti. What was your big takeaway from Staples there?
Maybe with the food or the college football, because now I'm going through my head what did I see that was invented in my lifetime? I mean, my quick answer, just being from Staten Island, New York, they do a lot of rolls, like chicken rolls, where it's basically just – it's like pizza dough, but you put stuff inside of it, wrap it up, and sometimes you could dip it in sauce. It's full of cheese. That I just feel like was not around –
You just said when you said New York, I don't know how this wings didn't happen 100 years ago, right? Especially even in my lifetime,
especially not boneless. I actually remember like when they started promoting boneless wings at like your, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings, places like that. I was like, boneless, like how do you get boneless wings? And that they became the hit because people don't want to deal with the bones. That's definitely a new invention. That's very recent.
Well, that's for sure. But people are weird about the boneless wings thing because they get caught up in the name. And I get it. It's not a wing, but it's sort of like, I don't care. I've moved on from the belly aching about pineapple on pizza. If you like it, okay, let's just not call it pizza, though, because that's not what it is anymore. That's the same sort of thing. If they had their own name, we would appreciate the boneless wing more, but curmudgeons like the bellyache. Like, that's just a chicken finger. Okay, tastes good though, right? When it's got the good sauce on it. So what are we getting caught up with? Last couple things, Spaghetti. So you're in Seattle.
Yes.
As we speak here, as we say, tough loss for you. Where do you come down on your Giants and what is proving? And by the way, I do have to shout myself out here a little bit. I told you that the Commies ain't jive. I told you that they're playing a little bit better, and they needed to get Carson Wentz out of there, even though he delivered the first win in their little win streak here. But also, Brian Robinson gives them something that – and it, the way the NFL's tracking this year, you get a banger like that in the backfield, he makes them a different team as well. But I'm not getting caught up in the Commies. They're not going to end up winning the division. But how say you about your Giants in the second half of the season? Remaining optimistic, at least the playoffs for you?
I mean, optimistic, sure. I mean, anything that happens this season, unless they lose literally every single remaining game, would be optimistic just because of what the expectations were and how good they looked. The Giants have always struggled in Seattle. I know they did win that game with Colt McCoy a few years back versus Russ when he was still there. I thought they could win this game. I did pick them to win. Obviously, something happened in this game that has not happened all season long, which was special teams turnovers. When Richie James gives up two offensive possessions by fumbling punts, that changes a lot. He also, not him, but on another return, they lost about 40 yards of field position due to a pretty miserable penalty. They called a personal foul, which I think they misnumbered the guy, but it was pretty weak. Jerome Boger did not have a great game. So you lose 40 yards in one possession, one drive. You lose the ball twice. That could have been the difference in the game. But Seattle's a tough team. They run the ball really well. Obviously, when Lockett and DK Metcalf played, that was a bummer for Giants fans. But tough environment. You know, I did not expect them to go 16-1. Best part, they have the bye coming up. They have the Texans. They have the Lions. They should get a few wins there. They do have the Commanders twice too, which I still think the Giants should win both of those games. So a lot of winnable games left on this schedule. But all in all, you can't really complain at all. 6-2 is phenomenal.
That's exactly right. That's the bottom line. Have some perspective, everybody. You didn't expect to be at this spot. Same goes for you, Seattle fans. No one's disrespecting you. It's just surprising. That's all. Nobody thought Geno Smith was going to go in there and do it. You don't need to hit up social media to let everybody know that that we're being disrespectful to your team. It's surprising, obviously, that Geno Smith is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and the Seahawks are one of the best stories going. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, like Jerry Orbach and they had a Dirty Dancing. All right, we'll try to figure it all out and be better for you by the next episode, when we'll have Kevin Hench on board for us for our Thursday episode of -3. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out all the great shows on the Extra Points Network and getting in there playing with us, against us, extrapoints.com for the upcoming NFL Pick'em for the upcoming week, of course. And until then, for Eddie Spaghetti and Andy Staples and everybody at the Extra Points Network, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.